Now Sri Krishna tells us that there are three kinds of tyaga. Everything in the Gita is three. Three kinds of tyaga. So what are the three kinds? Tamasic, Rajasic and Sattvic. So sacrifice or giving up can be either tamasic, which is that out of darkness, out of ignorance, or Rajas, out of passion, or Sattvic, out of purity. So what is tamasic tyaga, we'll do today, and then next week we'll do rajasic and sattvic tyagas. So verse number 7. Niyatasya tu sanyasah karmano nopapadyate मोहातस्य परित्यागः तामसः परिकीर्तितः. सो नियतस्य कर्मणः. सो द फर्स्ट लाइन फर्स्ट वर्ड एंड द फर्स्ट वर्ड ऑफ द नेक्स्ट सेक्शन नियतस्य कर्मणः. सो नियतस्य कर्मणः मीन्स ऑब्लिगेटरी ड्यूटीज. Niyata is what is obligatory duties to sannyasa. Sannyasa means giving up, not performing obligatory duties. Na upapadyate is not the right thing to do. So whatever your obligatory duties are, you must perform. Giving up those is not right. And if this giving up is due to moha, moha means delusion, due to wrong understanding, parityaga, tyaga is giving up, parityaga means completely giving up. So a person is giving up his duties completely out of delusion. Whatever he or she, their obligatory duties are, and if one gives it out of delusion, out of wrong understanding, it is called tamasa. Parikirtita means it is well known, it is understood as tamasic. So that is, tamasic is the lowest kind of tyaga. So, let us spend a little time talking about the different kinds of karma. What is obligatory karma? What is niyata karma? So, we see that our rishis were subjective scientists. You know, we see objective scientists like a chemist. What does he do? He classifies and organizes all the chemicals, you know, organic, inorganic, heavy metals and, you know, all those different elements and so on. A physicist will organize the laws of nature, law of gravitation, the law of physics, heat, cold and all that. A botanist will organize the plants, you know, they belong to the different families, different genus and species. Zoologist will be spending time organizing animals. So these rishis, so these are all objective scientists, but the rishis were subjective scientists where they organized thoughts. What are the different kinds of thoughts which are in a person's mind, which result in different kind of actions? So they looked at the inner individual, who the inner individual is. They did not spend time. They saw that there is this beautiful world created by the Lord. But then they felt that the problems in the world cannot be solved by external means. You may externally fix the situation. A person is poor, he becomes rich and gets a very big house. But inside, if he is unhappy for whatever reason, maybe his relationship or maybe he's some inner turmoil or some inner, then no matter, even he may be living in a palace or living, but if he is unhappy inside, it doesn't matter where he is living. So, more important is fixing the inner individual. The outer circumstances, the whole of economists and politicians and all of them are involved in fixing the outer world. And they're making more and more comforts. And that's good. I'm not saying that it is wrong, you know, making planes and, you know, cars and better roads and all that is very good, air conditioning and all. But until you fix the inner individual, the life will not change. The life will remain the same. So that's why the whole focus of the spiritual literature is to work on the individual, work on the subject, that is me, my mind and intellect, fix my thoughts. And then only when my thoughts are sattvic, then my actions will be sattvic. If my thoughts are tamasic, my actions will be tamasic. So change the thinking, then you can change the individual. So their whole focus was on that, and that's what the Guru Shishya Parampara was, to teach the individuals to be better individuals. And then they said karmas are of different kinds of karmas. They classified action, karma means action, very beautifully. First they said there is nishiddha or nikrishta karma. Nishiddha means forbidden, nikrishta means the low actions that lead to lust and fear. So low actions or forbidding actions should not be done. And that everybody knows. Even the, you know, the Ten Commandments say, thou shall not steal, thou shall not, you know, covet thy neighbor's wealth and all those things. So it is clearly there in all the faiths, in all the religions, that forbidden activity should not be done. You know, things that are illegal, immoral, those activities or that take me downward should not be done. Okay, now how about the activities that should be done? So they say they are called niyatam karma. Niyatam means obligatory duties. These are activities I must do. So niyatam is obligatory duties. Now obligatory duties are of two kinds. One is nitya and one is naimitya. Nitya means daily. So these are activities I must do daily. Like I must get up in the morning and take a bath. A person will say, why should I take a bath? It's wasting water. They say, no, if you don't take a bath, it will be bad for you and bad for your neighbors. You know. So that is obligatory duty. I have to do that. I have to take a bath. I have to, you know, eat healthy. I have to exercise. I have to sleep good. Some people say, I don't need 6 hours of sleep. I can manage on 3-4 hours. Yeah, for a while you'll do it. Why? I have so much work. I don't have time to sleep. But after a while, you will fall apart. 3 hours, 4 hours, you sleep and work for months and years. And what will happen? One morning, person didn't wake up. What happened? He got a heart attack in the middle of the night. Didn't take care of himself, didn't exercise, didn't eat right, didn't, you know, get enough sleep. And so that's what happens. So these are called nitya karmas, which we all must do. Then, you know, taking care of my family, you know, taking care of my children, my spouse, my parents. All these are duties that we have to do every day. These are required, you know, doing working for the and doing a good job at work, doing what I'm supposed to do. And so that is called nitya karma. And then naimitya karma is special activities. Like suppose somebody is sick in the hospital, I go visit that person so that person feels good or share my sympathy. Or there is a wedding or there is a newborn child, I go and, you know, congratulate and, you know, join them in their joy. Or there is a death in the family, I go and share my sorrow. Say my brother passed away and he has 2-3 small children. I shouldn't say he passed away, 2-3 children. Did he ask me before he produced those children? I'm not responsible for that. No, I should think it is my duty. You know, if it could have been the other way around, I could have had the heart attack. And if he was alive, I would expect him to take care of my children. Even though I have to cut my cloth and even though I have to compromise, I have a small house. But doing these kind of duties that are not regular daily duties, but special duties that came up, an unfortunate or an unusual occurrence came up, which is not a daily. So these are called naimitya karma, nitya naimitya. So nitya is daily, naimitya is special occasion. So together, these are called niyata. That's why he says niyatasya tu sanyasa karmana no padyate. These obligatory duties that are daily and special should not be given up. Then there are activities which are also sakam and nishkam. Sakam means with desire, nishkam means without desire. So selfish and unselfish. So selfish activities should be given up, unselfish activities must be done. So this is basically a broad outline of karmas. Of course, there is a lot more you can write, but basically, I just thought I would just give a little outline of what Krishna means by niyata karma. Niyata karma means obligatory duties, duties that I must do. And it says that when this giving up of these obligatory duties is due to moha, due to delusion, then that is tamasic, that is wrong. And people say ignorance, like I didn't know, you know, I was supposed to do this. If I didn't know, then they say, no, ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance, if you do not do your duties out of ignorance, it is wrong. It is like I'm driving on the street at 55 and the speed limit was 35. And the police stops me. He says, officer, I didn't know the limit was 35. And I didn't see the sign. He says, ignorance is not an excuse. Whether you knew or did not know, the limit on the street is 35. If you're driving 55, you will get a ticket. So ignorance is not an excuse. Even in the law, you know, say, I did not know that this particular law existed in this particular state. It doesn't matter once you violate the law. So similarly here, if you say, I have not read the scriptures, I have not read the Gita, I did not know that this is right and this is wrong, it doesn't matter. A wrong karma will result in a wrong result, end up with a wrong result. But the law of karma is very clear. A wrong thing will give you a wrong result. A right thing will give you a right result. So ignorance is not an excuse. But people renounce out of moha, out of delusion, not with the right understanding. See, the right understanding is like Buddha. You know, he also renounced. He gave up his kingdom, his wife and his child. But his understanding was clear. First of all, he made sure that his wife and son were living in a palace. They were going to be well taken care of. It's not that he was leaving them on the street. And secondly, his giving up was for a higher purpose, that I want to get out of this sorrow. I want to find a solution of the sorrow. And by his renunciation, billions of Buddhists all over the world have continued to benefit even 2,000, 3,000 years after he left this body. But there are some people who gave up out of moha. Like there was this example, there was this man who used to work very hard. And he says, my wife and children don't appreciate me. My teenager, he talks back to me. My wife never, you know, says thank you, doesn't even appreciate what I'm doing. I'm going to take sannyas. So one day he brings orange clothes, he puts them on, resigns his job, he goes to the forest. And then he goes to the Ganges and 1 week, he's very happy. Ah, I'm so peaceful. There is no wife yelling. There is no teenagers shouting. There is no boss yelling at me. I am in so much comfort. And he's sitting on the bank of the river. After a week, the novelty wears off. Then he starts thinking, you know, my teenager is only 13 or 14. And he doesn't even study on his own. And if I am not there, what's going to happen to him? You know, I used to sit with him and do his homework every day. Maybe I should write them a letter and encourage him to study. And then my wife, you know, she's very nice. But she doesn't even know how to write a check or how to make a bank deposit and how is she going to pay the bills. And then he's regretting. You know why? Because he did not think through the whole thing. You know, out of a temporary frustration, he just gave up. And sometimes we find in people in India, even here, people become monks, you know, or go to the monastery, become priests. Out of wrong understanding, because my father had said, my parents expected me, they do not have the inner vairagya, the inner detachment. When you do the activities like that, then those are the kind of people who, even though they may become monks or priests, or they do not have the inner detachment, that's when all these problems occur, you know, child molestation and pedophilia. Why? Because these people have become given up without getting that inner vairagya, that inner, so that is called tamasic, that is out of moha, either out of maybe family pressure, you know, they say, oh, you know, parents expected me to become a priest. A lot of Christian families, that is their pressure is there. And so these people become priests because they are forced, or this girlfriend jilted him, you know, in high school and said, life is not worth living, I'm going to become a monk. And so he goes and joins the priesthood. But he does not have the inner detachment. And so such with giving up is called tamasic. Like there was this man in Kerala who used to always threaten his wife, you know, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to go jump in the well. Every day he will say that. So after a few days, she got fed up, you know. She said, you want to jump? Go jump. She was also fed up of hearing. So he goes. After 10 minutes, he comes back. So she said, you're back? Why didn't you jump? He said, I didn't jump for you, for your benefit. She said, what do you mean, my benefit? If I had jumped, you would have become a widow. So as a favor to you, I did jump in the well. So such a detachment is out of moha, out of delusion, out of wrong understanding. So that's what Sri Krishna says, that obligatory, like now it is that person who had left and become a sannyasi, it was his duty to take care of his wife and children. But out of a temporary sense of, frustration, he gave up everything and now he's regretting. Why? Because his wife is unhappy, children are unhappy, there is nobody earning. So whatever our obligatory duties are, they must be done. They should not be given up, because not performing that out of wrong understanding is tamasic. And the word tamas in Sanskrit means darkness. So darkness means ignorance, lack of right knowledge, lack of understanding. So when we do not understand what is my duty, and then I give it up out of wrong understanding, out of delusion, that is called tamasic. And not doing duty can not only be for an individual, but can be for governments, can be for corporations. Like many times we find people who are elected, they start with saying, I'm here to serve the people, and that's their motto, serve, service, and all these big mottos they come up with. But the moment they get elected, they become, okay, now I am the boss. And so then they start working for themselves. And they have no idea of, public service, how much maximum I can accumulate for myself, how much I can become rich, I can become powerful, so I can get elected to the next post from the, from the assembly, California Assembly. I should become a congressman, then I should become a senator, then I should become, not that there is any harm in ambition, but their whole purpose is to become more rich, become more power. And we see that in all societies, a lot more in other countries besides the US, where their whole purpose is how rich I can get, how fast, how much money I can accumulate. The corruption is so much. The opposite of that is governments who promote welfare. What we are finding, that more and more people, as a physician now, we see so many people, young, healthy guys, some of them are weighing 220 pounds, muscular, and young men, and they are on welfare. And I'm like, why is this guy on welfare? Why is he not working? Who is giving him that card to come and get free healthcare? And who is paying? You and I are paying. For physician, it's okay because we are earning that. But who is taking care of these guys? And some of them are in the gym lifting weights and not doing. And that is again a fault of the government, fault of the individual too, who is misusing the system. If somebody is truly handicapped, or there is a mother with 2-3 children and she has no way to earn, you can help her or help somebody who is disabled or somebody. But a healthy young guy, why should he be on welfare? I have no idea. I just don't understand. And with this new law, I mean, millions of people have been given welfare who have nothing wrong with them. They just show up there and they get the card, and then they come and get every kind of medical care, CAT scans and x-rays and all labs and antibiotics, all the medicines. That is a fault of the people and the fault of the government. They should be very selective on who should be given welfare. That is pure tamas. If you are able to work and you don't work, and you can go out work in the fields, you can work as and help become a gardener's, assistant or a helper, or there are a lot of things can be done. And we also find tamas in corporations. These companies who their only motive is to make money. It doesn't matter how many people are hurt, how many people they are cheating, and how much dishonesty, and they just keep raising the prices. They will get together and gang up and jack up the price, whether it's oil companies or the electric companies. insurance companies, that's what we find, that they keep their margin of profit regardless of what happens to the individual. They don't care whether people are suffering or not. Or corporations that make harmful products like guns, you know, or even countries. You know, the US is the number one seller of weapons in the world. We sell enough, and we talk about peace, but we sell billions of dollars of weapons. We sell to the Israelis and to the Arabs, to both equally. So they can fight and kill each other. And who makes the profit? US. Russia also does it. France, Germany, Britain, they all sell weapons, but nobody sells even half of what the US does. US sells more than all the other countries put together. And that is tamasic when you're selling weapons or cigarettes. If we find that cigarettes in the US have gone down, the consumption, because of education. But if you go to the Philippines, you went to Vietnam, everybody smokes. Men, women, children, everyone smokes. And these companies market them aggressively. They, you know, through the sports stars and through the actors in the movies and the TV, all the advertisements are of cigarettes in the races, car races. Here, or same thing is alcohol. You might say, well, alcohol. It's the same thing. It is a basically a harmful product that is marketed as healthy, but actually there is nothing healthy. So anything that, and we see so many problems, drunk driving and liver failure and, you know, all these mental and physical, families are broken up because of alcohol. So whether it's a government, whether it's a corporation, or whether it's an individual, activities where the duties are given up. See, the duty of the government is to work for the welfare of all. The duties of the corporation, yes, one should make a profit, but not at the expense of the people, not an obscene amount of profit where the CEO gets, you know, 120 million, some, you know, they have salaries of amazing amounts, obscene amounts, and the lowest person gets nothing. So this is called tamasic. And this is whether it's a government, whether it's a corporation, or whether it's an individual, Krishna says that whatever your duties are, you must perform. Do not do activities that are nishiddha and nikrishta. Nishiddha means forbidden. Nikrishta means do not do low activities that generate lust, that generate fear. Do what is required and do it unselfishly. If you do not do that, and if you give up out of ignorance or out of wrong understanding, then that is called tamasik tyaga, and that is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita, is condemned in all the literatures. And the next week, we'll talk about Rajasik and Sattvic Tyaga. What is Rajasik and what is Sattvic Tyaga? What does a Rajasik person give up? What does a Sattvic person give up? And what is the attitude of such an individual? So we'll go into more detail. Any questions, comments?
So we have some kind of examples in our history somewhere where that soul comes from one body and can go to another body.
Right. Well, I think that was an unusual level of rishi who was that evolved that he could do that. I think for most average people, it's not possible for us to do that. You can have out-of-body experience. You know, people who are spiritually evolved can have out-of-body experience where even when they're lying down, they can actually go out of their body and see their own body lying. And, you know, the soul, the individuality. And I have met a lot of people who have described that, and they're not bluffing. You know, they're genuine. It's out-of-body experience is very, not very common, but it is well known, where a person actually can get out of their body and see their body lying there. And then they can actually travel to higher worlds and go up to, but they can only go up to a certain level. And then beyond that, they're struggling to go. And I met a lady who has described that. She says, even when I was a child, I could actually watch myself lying. And then she says, I can go. And she, even though she's non-Indian, she's not an Indian, she describes meeting Indian gods. She's very close to Ganpati, and this is true. And she says, he took me. She says, he held my hand and took me. And she says, I saw these two men with bow and arrows. Who were they? She's not Indian. And she said, I saw this. So she actually saw Ram and Lakshman. She said they were walking with bow. And then I saw this young little boy running around with a flute and looking very beautiful with a peacock. So, and then she said, I saw this man sitting in meditation, look, with the snakes around. So she describes all these things that she has never would not have known. So what I'm saying is people can experience out of body and actually can go into different worlds. Their subtle body goes, but it does not mean that the life goes. You know, the life is still in them, but the subtle body, the soul, we can call the individuality, can travel out of body and go into other worlds and then come back. And then another example is this near-death experience. You must have heard of that, you know, where people, when they're very close to dying, and they describe having a very pleasant experience where there may be a lot of misery and a very painful body, almost dead, but they go into this world where they describe a lot of peace and light, and some of them actually come back. You know, Murjani is one, that Lady Murjani, you can Google that. And she talks about her near-death experience, and a lot of people have that, where they actually go to different worlds and come back. But this transferring into another body, I mean, maybe a rishi can do that, probably.
We have two stories. Radha Bhattacharya's story was that when his wife dies because he blubbed.
Yeah, I mean, these are some stories, you know, and they may be true or may not be true. But I think it's, for the average individual, probably it's not possible to do that. Maybe an advanced rishi could do that. You know, for them, when they are that evolved, nothing is impossible.
That's just amazing that people can reach to that level. We are so...
Right, right. And also, what use you are making of your power. You know, if you have that much power, you should use it to realize, you know, rather than transferring yourself into another body. And to me, that's not very productive. But in that case, the rishi wanted to win the debate, so he did it, you know. So, yeah, and he's helping somebody. But again, that's very rare, I think, right? And then in India, they have these, you know, these people who remove bhoot. You know, they say that some evil spirit has occupied, and they keep beating that person with a jhadu and all, with a broom and all. I think a lot of that is just bunk. I don't know.
As a literate, people can relate to it, but that science has not developed.
Yeah, no. Yogis have this. I'm not doubting that. What I'm saying is the people were beating somebody else to remove the bhoot and all. We are not sure. But no, yogis have this power. They can find out things that, you know, that are in another village or even another lifetime, what this person. And they can be very accurate. So, yeah, there is a lot of spiritual power in people who are very evolved. See, because once they become one with that total, with that om, the totality, consciousness, then for them the whole universe becomes known. So that's why he says, not knowing that in the Taittiriya Upanishad, the father asked the son, did your teacher teach you knowing which everything becomes known? So for that evolved an individual, they can do these things, and that doesn't surprise me. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is described where they can talk about their family or their neighborhood. These are well described, and they can tell what's going to happen in the future. They can predict. They can see through the wall what's happening next door or next, you know, they can exactly describe. So, yeah, those powers are there because they go beyond the body. See, we are all stuck in the body, but those who are evolved can work at the higher planes of consciousness. And, yeah, that is definitely.
The Catholics believe that people's spirits can come to reside in them.
Yeah, but what I believe. You know, there is a very famous song, Janaki Nath Sahai Kare To Kon Bigad Kare. If you remember the Lord and if you are with Him, nobody can touch you. That's a very beautiful bhajan. I'm sure all of you have heard. If you have not heard, those you know, who understand Hindi, Janaki Nath Sahai Kare. It's such a beautiful bhajan that if Ramchandraji is protecting you, nothing in the world, you don't have to worry about Shani or Mangal. The planets cannot affect you. Then even your worst enemy, nothing, no one can touch you. So what I really believe is in the name of the power of the name of the Lord. Once you remember the Lord and have Him with you, you're fine. You know, I'm sure these spirits and all might be there, but I personally have no experience. And I really believe that just remember the Lord and do your work and nothing will happen to you. He will be there to protect you. He's the superior power. So how can a little small little spirit or some small little ghost affect you when the supreme Lord of the whole universe is with you? Who has not only this universe, millions of such universes all over He has created. A little bit chota mota spirit cannot do anything to you. So that bhajan, I always remember that. It's such a beautiful bhajan. One should memorize that. Janaki Nath Sahai Kare, Kona Vigad Kare Naratero. You should download that and memorize it. I have memorized it. It's such a beautiful bhajan. Yes.
Whatever he says, he follows. Means, is that he's a saint or means, what is that technology?
That hypnotism is, he's not a saint. A hypnotist has the ability to take over the mind of somebody else and make them do what he wants. And they even perform on the stage. You know, they would bring 10 people and make them do. So that is a siddhi. That is a power. It doesn't mean he's a saint. A hypnotist is not a saint.
Transferring of soul is nothing but that is the process of...
No, transferring of soul is different. Here he is actually taking over your mind and intellect. He is making you his servant, where you will do anything he wants. So he's taking over your mind and intellect. He's not transferring his soul into you or your soul anywhere. He's taking over. It's like, you know, you take over and control somebody.
Yeah, basically.
Right.
Can convert back to energy, that converts back to mass.
You know, that's a very good point. If you can master energy, you can travel anywhere. You can do anything because energy is one.
Right.
And energy is converted into matter and matter is converted. So if you are at the level of energy, you can control the mass. People can make things move, like a glass move from here to there on the table and all, because they have mastered the energy. That's a very good point. Thank you.
Even hypnotists cannot hypnotize all the people.
Yes. Right.
True.
Yes. It depends. Yeah. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Makaschid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.